I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Oh, he. But anyway, about
that. Oh, Captain my Jamie.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Lore Boys. My name is James P. Shooter Miller, and here is...
It's Ethan Pistol Palmer!
That was cool.
It's Pete Mid-Caliber O'Donoghue.
Mid.
So if you haven't guessed from the art, the title, and from our cool intro, we're
if
talking...
If you haven't guessed from the title... Like, do a concussion test. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, we don't even know what the title is yet. It could be anything.
I mean, the title is Enter the Gungeon Lore. The subtitle is something wacky that we came up with, to be fair.
That's a good point. Okay. Well, if you don't need to get your head checked, you're probably a patron, because you're the smartest of them all. And so, who do we got? We got some new ones since last week.
Peter?
Sorry, I thought you had pulled it up. I saw you looking at your screen.
I asked you. I said, you're going to read them? You said
In the meantime,
I got him.
Well, you could... Just letting me fill would have been better, that I think, but...
Sorry.
We could talk notes after the show. Yeah.
Okay.
If you want to just load the silence with extra witty bullets, that might be the way to do it. But yeah, big thank yous to Matt Frater. I believe he subscribed during the bonus last week, so thank you officially. Also... Decker the Dude, who's been very active on Discord. Thank you.
And has a cool Bandcamp or SoundCloud. I can't remember which. I think SoundCloud. But I checked out some of his stuff. Like Boss Fight is one of his songs.
Really?
Yeah. Some good stuff there.
Cool. He's cracking natty lights in the Discord server and getting chatty.
Oh, yeah, brother.
Then we have Tyler Chudik or Hudik. I don't know how to say that, but thank you. And finally, Tyrese Doolin.
Great name.
I see that you sent us a message. I will get back to you probably. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah.
I sent him a message, and he sent us a message saying, like,
perfect.
Appreciate
Never
the
mind.
Show, so don't worry about it, Peter.
Oh, okay.
You're doing fine.
Cool. I'm glad someone did that, because I meant to do it too. So who requested this one for Enter the Gungeon? We only had two people who shouted it out specifically. So Sketchy Jesus being one of our patrons, one of the folks we met in Montreal for LoreCon.
Oh, gee.
Yeah. And Arc Lord Dark or Dirk, being one of the green names, a supporter who's been active in the Discord. And but other than that, I've seen a lot of people talk about the game, specifically Fragile Shark and Jesterful, longtime supporters of the show. They've, like, whenever I searched Gungeon or whatever just to see who requested it, it was either Fragile or Jester just being, yeah, this game's fucking awesome. I'm sure they'll appreciate it too.
Broadly, excellent taste for both of them, I must say, because Gungeon, my limited experience with it, is fantastic. I really, really do enjoy it.
Yeah. Fragile gets into all my N64 bullshit too, which is I really appreciate. So. So Enter the Gungeon, what is it? What's your relationship with it? Let's talk a little bit about it. What do you guys know?
I own it on EGS. I've gotten to the second, like, proper Gungeon bosses, so it's like the stage 2 bosses, and never beaten a one of them, I don't think. Anyway, maybe I've beaten one of them once, but I really don't think so.
Okay.
That would have inspired me to keep trying and playing more, probably, if I had at least beaten one of them. But I think I just kept running into that wall and said, this game's too hard for me.
Yeah.
No, I've played it twice. I have it on PlayStation. So during the pandemic, PlayStation gave away some free games to, like, hey, play inside sort of stuff. Gungeon was one of them. I played it there, and I've beaten one boss. I beat the Trigger Twins, who are like two like bullets that hop around and shoot other bullets at you. So I beat them. And then the second boss I encountered, I know there's a seagull, which I guess we'll get into later, but the second boss I fought was the Ammo Conda, the snake, who I did not beat. And then, the same thing for me. I was like, damn, that was hard, and just never played it again. And then I played it co-op with one of our mutual friends, Jesse, once, when he and I used to live together, so we would do couch co-op sometimes, and we played it like that, which is a lot easier, obviously. But as far as solo, I've done a boss and a half. That's about it.
I was convinced that Pete and I had played together online one night on a community night when I was, like, blackout drunk.
We tried. That's true. Yeah.
But we didn't.
Because me and friend of the show, Bobby, were going to play Gungeon, because Jamie's been back on it, hitting it, so we're like, oh, yeah, we'll play it or whatever, and, like, Jamie was like, yeah, there's co-op. So I was like, oh, okay, cool. I do think I would enjoy it a lot more as co-op because, like, less responsibility is solely on me to kill the boss. So, like, yeah, let's do that. So we look it up. We hop in a game. We're like, okay, here's the co-op guy. Like, okay, it's just saying connect to other controllers. So that's for local co-op. Looking around, can't find the multiplayer co-op. I'm like, Jamie, are you sure there's multiplayer co-op? Jamie's like, yeah, absolutely. Me and Pete have played it before online. I was like, all right, dude, sure, if you say so. I'm like, now I'm like Googling. I'm like, no, to do online co-op, you like need mods and you need to do like some like a port for like you need to like
need directly
peer to peer. Yeah, you need parsnips, as Jamie would put it. And I'm like, there's no way we're doing this. And then sure enough, we asked Pete. He's like, yeah, we tried one time. But Jamie was like, oh, well, I guess I was blackout drunk that time, so I don't really remember.
Yeah, I remember the attempt at it not working, and that's about it. But on Steam, you can play online co-op because Steam has a built-in play, online couch co-op, like play remotely together is what they call it, or whatever the fucking branding is.
I have it on Steam. It
is really cool, yeah, because I had it on, I think it was on Game Pass, which is where we would have tried it.
That's I originally played it on Game Pass because when I was paying for it, I had it free there. Yeah.
And then I have it on PlayStation, which is no good to anybody. So like had I it on Steam, we could, remote play together, which is a really cool feature on Steam.
Now that I have it on Steam, can I invite one of you guys to play in my instance of the game?
I finish a bottle of wine and we'll try after that.
I've already mentioned that I have it on EGS because it was free on EGS at some point. So.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyways, let's hop into lore. Like, it is a twin stick shooter. If you guys don't know what it is,
how many times have you beaten it, James? You didn't talk about how much experience you have with the game.
So I've gotten to the fourth floor like twice back on when I had it on Game Pass. And now I've gotten to the third floor like three times.
Okay.
But I'm really hindering my own progress because I'm going for all the secret rooms along the way, which will slow you down a lot as you're learning. But if you can comfortably do all the secret rooms up till the secret room 3, your consistency for beating the game goes way the fuck up. Because you can get all this extra stuff. And we're going to talk about all those three secret rooms. That's kind of where we're going to finish up the episode.
Okay, cool.
But at first, we're going to talk about the people who made the game and how it came together. It being an indie project, it kind of has a cool story. So in 2013 is when people who made this started collaborating. And it only came out much later, I think in like 2017 or 16. But anyways, in 2013 is when they started playing, collaborating. And it was three employees from Mythic Entertainment.
Oh, that sounds familiar.
You would know. I know why you would know it, Pete.
I don't know.
Okay.
Or I don't know it off the top of my head anyway.
So it was purchased by EA like around that time. And it was most known for Dark Age of Camelot, an older MMORPG, which is like from 99. But what you would know it from is BioWare Mythic. At one point, they helped BioWare Edmonton make Dragon Age 2.
Oh, Dragon Age 2.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, because it sounded familiar, and I'm looking at their Wikipedia. I'm like, why was I not informed in 1998 that there was a Godzilla Online? First question. And afterwards, just like, Dark Age of Camelot, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I've heard, it's because I've heard about Warhammer Age of Reckoning. I knew this game existed. Okay. Yeah.
The Warhammer MMO from
Ultima Online, Stygian Abyss, and then thanks for the help on Dragon Age 2, guys.
Yeah, that's an MMORPG like back in the day. Like that's pre-classic WoW MMORPG. So
yeah,
definitely before MMORPGs blew up in the public.
Yeah, you guys remember Hellgate London? That was another MMO that looked really cool that just didn't take off.
No, I have no recollection of Hellgate London as an MMO. No. It's an action role playing game, dude.
Okay, let's see. So none of us remember it as an MMO. Good. Never mind.
Was there?
So yeah,
I'm trying to see if there's a Hellgate MMO, but I can't see anything, Pete. I'm sorry. I'm trying to help you here.
There's a bunch of old ones. There's like Farscape. EverQuest is the one I was trying to think. Yeah.
EverQuest is a classic, right?
Like, yeah.
Isn't that pre WoW?
That's pre WoW. I think that might be pre Diablo or close to Diablo.
EverQuest Online initial release 2003.
Oh. Okay, later than I thought. That's just
I would be surprised if an MMO beat Diablo. Are you saying Diablo 1?
I was thinking Diablo 2, but because I'm thinking of the way Everscape looks, and it looks just as bad as Diablo 2.
Well, yeah, that's usually like WoW, original WoW looked pretty bad too, right? But yeah. It's usually like you sacrifice the assets and the, you know, the art for the scale, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, anyway, we're talking about Gungeon, sorry.
Gungeon, yeah.
Whoops.
Well, we are dipping into the past. That's Mythic Entertainment, where these folks came from. So. In 2014, Mythic Entertainment was shut down. Basically, EA felt they weren't making enough money and pulled the plug. It's
EA
sad.
Really did.
Yeah, exactly. Just EA doing what they do. So they were actually offered a job at another EA studio. I'm not sure which one. But they already had kind of wanted to do their own thing. And like as early as 2013, we're already telling their bosses, hey, we might split off at any time. And in 2014, the thing shuts down. So they're like, well, let's take 4 days off and then work 7 days a week until we can make a new game.
Jesus. Okay.
Cool.
So they took their little vacation. Then the main five people, or the main three people who started it are Brent Sodman, David Rubel, which are both programmers, and then David Crooks, who's a designer. And eventually Joe Hardy, who's an artist, and Erica Hampson, who's a sound designer, would join them as well. Erica Hampson being the partner of one of the Daves. I couldn't figure out which one.
Okay.
But
more voice canon. It's the second one.
Yeah, it's the designer, not the programmer. The programmer is ugly and stupid. or smart, probably. But
fuck you, particular guy.
fuck you, particular your fantastic Dave. Game.
No, I love everyone who made this game, because this game is awesome. Joe Hardy, by the way, who did all the art for this game, had never done pixel art before. He taught himself to do pixel art for this game, and it has exceptional pixel art.
Yeah, he gave himself a fucking masterclass in pixel art, clearly. Because if you guys haven't seen the art yet, you could look it up. It is so consistent, so cute, and so just like, it's like silently funny. Just like looking at it is already good, like not in motion.
Yeah, like you open a chest or something and it has a face on it. The eyes are bullets and the mouth is like a revolver or something. And like everything is so gun themed. One of the common bullet enemies that you'll meet is a bulletkin, which is just like a bullet who hops around and has a smiley face. And like whenever their guns shoot, like their little pistols, it like a snake eating a meal. You see the lump of the bullet coming out.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's so cute. Like a Looney Tunes gun.
Yeah.
Well, because the actual bullets are like. They're like usually red circles that are like much larger than the gun,
that's
right?
That's true, yeah. Yep. Yeah.
So,
which took a lot of careful consideration, by the way. They like looked at thousands of different types of bullets, like from other games, just to try and find the one that would fit best with their game. So it felt fair when you get hit by one. Mm. Like you should be able to see it coming. It shouldn't be a surprise. It should move in a predictable way. And they settled on these big white circles, bigger than you might like think for a normal bullet, with a red outline. And every place that you fight in is pretty dark, so that white with the red outline really pops
out. Stands
out,
man.
They even had a level where you went to heaven for a while, but they scrapped it because the bullets just were too
white on white.
Exactly. Yeah, that wasn't even my script. That was something I knew. So
very cool.
they I love it because they would have called the stage Bullet Heaven, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That would have been the stage. So
there is a stage called Bullet Hell, which is
there you go.
The sixth.
Less clever than Bullet Heaven, I think, but still pretty good.
Maybe it was after they scrapped it. That one,
Dave. If you had time for your fucking wife, you'd think of better puns. Nah.
That one is like the sixth secret level. And you can fight the Lich in that one. That one I've never been to, and we're not going to cover today, but it's worth bringing up since we mentioned the bullet hell thing.
Just the Lich? No pun?
Just the Lich, yeah.
But he's like he's a cowboy with a smoking revolver. He looks very cool.
Okay.
Yeah, sure. Very hard fight. So Dave, Brent, and Erica, they all live together already. Oh, yeah. So they took their living room and they turned it into an office. And the other Dave and Joe would come by every day and just work out of the office.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I guess pre-work from home when you didn't have a proper setup or an office because you lost your job at EA.
Yeah. 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 So while working, one of the Daves was listening to the soundtrack from the game Gun Gods, which Gods with a Z. I looked it up. It's just basically a Doom clone.
Okay.
Yeah. And with this fresh in his mind, he's just thinking about the words gun and dungeon, and then he combined them to say gungeon in his head, and that really resonated, so he kind of held on to that idea. So they started chatting about the idea, and Brent wondered why anyone would even go into this gungeon. Like, if you had a dungeon filled with bullets, like, why would you go in, right? It seems kind of dangerous. And then Dave, just from a gut reaction, said to get a gun to kill the past, which ends up being the whole whole game. That's what you're trying to do.
I hope that's true, but that sounds like the line he would say in the like biopic of making this game, right?
Yeah.
Most of what I got on this guy's story was from a YouTube channel who basically scoured every interview they've ever done. So this is through the lens of a guy interpreting an interview.
I'm
not saying that he couldn't have had that like immediately great idea. He's just been thinking about like a gungeon for days. That's definitely like not unlikely, but I just think it's funny. It's just like, well,
I mean
music swells.
There's not many days, by the way. This is all happening very fast, and I'm going to tell you the scale of time pretty soon. But basically, by the time when they started their work, after taking their 4-day break, they had 11 days until E3 to come up with a full working demo.
Oh, okay.
That's what we call in the biz crunch.
Yeah.
Yeah. So since this is a pretty short time scale, they figured out the rest of the main lore over lunch. Just about as fast as we write an episode, they wrote their lore.
Yeah, see, crunch is always worth it, kids. Just
yeah, it's for the good of the company.
Yeah. It always pans out.
And what is absolutely crazy is they did manage to get a working draft of their game ready in 11 days. I'll show you a picture of what this is, the only known screenshot from the demo.
Comment, the Lich is incredibly cool. He is a cowboy skeleton. I didn't notice, but his eyes are bullets too.
Yeah, I think his teeth are also bullets, but
that's awesome.
I can't really tell.
This is the only known screenshot from the demo that was presented in 11 days time. And it already is starting to look kind of true to the game in terms of the pixel art.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, like knowing what both look like, you can see that they're cousins.
The pixel art style is there. I guess what we're looking at, there's like a little green Martian man who I assume is the playable character in this instance. There's a single lit torch, and then there's just like a stone on stone kind of labyrinth with like walls, I guess.
Yeah.
But the pixel art style from Gungeon, if the listeners are familiar with it, is absolutely there.
Yep. Big, cute heads, little dot eyes, tiny little rubbery body. Yeah, it's absolutely. Yep. Yeah.
And this is something they wanted to get together for E3 to show off to Devolver. And their inspiration at this point is Sheeran the Wanderer, which is a roguelite for DS. I think that's a bullet hell. Chocobo's Dungeon, which I've never played. And Pokemon Mystery Dungeon, which are all then they're like, let's take this dungeon crawler idea, add guns, bullet hell, and a dodge roll. And this is our main thing.
I've never heard of Sharon, but it looks hardcore weeaboo. So.
Yeah. And from that to later on, post getting a publisher and like actually developing the game to the game we know today, they were influenced by like Spelunky, by Binding of Isaac quite a lot. A lot of these like roguelikes that were really popular in the 2016-17.
The big head and the bouncy animation. This might be too obscure, but they kind of all look like the main guy from Fez, if anybody played that game.
Oh, yeah. It's
yeah.
People know Fez, I think. Yeah. I know it from the documentary.
Yeah.
So what they did is they got a laptop. They got their extremely early demo. And they went to E3 with no ticket, no pass. But they're just going to, let's figure it the fuck out. We're getting there.
These guys are just scrappy movie protagonists, right? Yeah. Like, clearly.
Yeah. The only thing I would change if I made a script, though, is change one of the guys not to be a Dave. So you can tell them.
Yeah. Eric or something. Another chick.
Yeah. Like when we changed Jamie's name from Peter.
We have started this show. Yeah. So Devolver, being a cool developer that it was already promoting its own games, but in an anti-convention approach. Instead of setting up inside with E3, they set up all their booths outside the parking lot to be like, fuck conventions. You know, Devolver, like they often put out like ironic videos making fun of developers and microtransactions and all these things.
Yeah, if you've ever seen their press conferences, they're always pre-recorded and they're like, CEO is this woman in like a Hillary Clinton pantsuit. And she is an insane person. She like kills one of her assistants. I think she gets killed at one point and comes back as RoboCop.
Yeah,
it's like they have their E3 press conferences are like a serialized sketch, basically, about this insane game executive. Basically,
it's a lot of irony. Yeah,
they have a game coming out called, I think it's called Wizard with a Gun. Which has one of the coolest trailers I've ever seen.
Oh, really?
They're wizards, but it's like cowboy style. So it's all these like wizards with like the big cowboy hats, and they've all got guns that they cast their spells from, I guess. But it's very nice and cool, I think.
Oh man, yeah. I'll talk about this later. This looks fucking awesome. Holy shit.
Yeah. I'm curious to look it up too, but I'm gonna look it up in a bit.
If you're driving a forklift, just pull up YouTube right now and check out the Wizard with a Gun trailer.
Yep. Yeah, so they showed up, didn't have a pass, lucked out because Devolver is like just set up in the parking lot for whatever reason. And so the dodge roll team did what anyone would do. They waited in their car for 6 hours because all the executives already had meetings set up for pitches at E3. They couldn't just walk in and go. So they waited and waited and waited for 6 hours. I can only imagine like them opening their laptop and closing it quickly because they want to have enough battery by the time shows up.
In the San Diego heat or wherever E3 is held to.
Oh, wait, I want to make a tweak on like slide 4, but don't leave the laptop open for too long. But eventually they met Nigel Lowry from Devolver, who is the CFO at the time. And he received their pitch. And by the end, Dodge Roll had no idea if they even liked it. All he asked was like, what platforms do you want to put this on? He had no follow-ups, nothing. So the team was like kind of discouraged, and they went back and they're like, well, Xbox One's new right now. PS4 is new right now. Probably push came to shove. We can get in one of those stores with an indie game because they need new games for their stores. Right. And, but after just a week, Devolver calls back and they said, we'll be your publisher. We'll support you.
Nice. Have you considered putting it on Steam? I don't know if you've heard of it. And they're like, what?
Yeah, it's like what they needed help with the most was marketing and legal support and stuff like that. They didn't, team of five couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
But what they were footing the bill for everything else. All five of those folks put their life savings into this game. And with a couple bumps along the way, they missed their first deadline and stuff, which later now they say they don't announce deadlines because it's too, it's too much. Like, don't announce a deadline 2 years down the line. Like, announce a deadline when you know it's going to finish, kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. That's why we're not going to hear anything about Elder Scrolls 6 until it's releasing this year. Because it's like, we're done. Like,
Yeah. So with the help of Devolver's for marketing legal, Dodrill had all the tools it needed to make the game. They had a couple speed bumps. They were worried because around that time, a lot of roguelikes were coming out. So their market share, like their pie, was just getting smaller and smaller the longer they waited to release. You know, I think they ended up selling 300,000 in the first month, 1 million in the first year, and 3 million in the first 3 years, or something along those lines. So, by all means, complete success.
I can't our podcast do that well. Fuck.
Yeah, like a million in the first years to 3 million in 3 years is like. It's like very steady, right? Which has got to be good. Like, I don't think it's what publishers per se look for. Like, you're probably looking for like heavy upfront to like recoup costs like quickly, but it still must be nice. A nice surprise to have continued to sell so well. I'm sure it like still sells decently well, just as like a classic, or like not a classic, but just like a game that anybody can kind of pick up and just like have.
They
a
must
good time
have
with, right?
taken like either chip payments or lump sum payments from both Epic Game Store and Microsoft now, because they're on both the Game Pass and was a free game on Epic.
There are 63,000 positive reviews on Steam right now, and it is overwhelmingly positive overall. So
there's like very little to say bad about the game. Like, it's hard, but it doesn't present itself as like here's a very easy learning curve. It's like this is a hard game. You're getting into a hard game. It's like a punishing bullet hell roguelite. So like, you're going to lose all your progress if you die. So try not to die, you know? Yeah.
There's a small amount of progress in the way that you get more people who will show up. There's like certain items that you only have to pay for this large amount once. And then it becomes cheaper every time after. The more items you unlock, the more powerful items you have access to, the more synergies you have access to. Like, for example, there's a Mega Man hand. And if you get a fiery bullets with it, all of a sudden now you have the normal shot, you have the fire shot.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, and the Mega Man hand has like, I think, 5 or 6 different synergies. So if you get all of them, every time you reload it and your gun's full, it just cycles through the different powers that it has.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
Oh, cool.
You can do like the tornadoes, you can do the ice blocks, the fire things, all the cool Mega Man stuff.
Yeah, there's a bunch of like referential guns in it, I know, from other games. And from the Dunkey review, I know there's one that's just the letter R that fires the word bullet at people.
Yes, which is very high ammo, very low damage. So
really,
it's not fair. Yeah, I keep getting into my runs and it's like not something you're excited to get.
Damn, I can't believe the R isn't the meta gun. Damn it.
There's one called the Fight Saber, I think, which is like it's got like an assault rifle, but it's like glowing green like Luke Skywalker's lightsaber, and then it's just got, instead of like a regular grip, it's just got like a sword handle as like the grip.
There's one so what I did actually is I wasn't sure how long we would run, and I just put the link for all the guns at the end of the episode, so if we do like run, if we have some extra time, we'll go over it at the
end.
Poke through those and laugh at them. There's a barrel that shoots fish out of it. Instead of shooting fish in a barrel, you shoot a barrel
out of
a
barrel.
Yeah, exactly. There's an op, which is Counter-Strike folks know as the big sniper. And if you spin your character and then shoot, you get extra damage, like doing 360 nose scopes.
Oh, that's great. Nose-scopes, yeah. There you go. Boom, headshot.
There's, I think you can get Samus's arm. That's another reference. There's the duck gun from NES. There's a bunch more, and if we have time, we'll get to those. But for now, this is kind of the setup of how we got to Gungeon. I'll post one last photo, and this was the photo they used during the pitch. Oh my god, that lady bleeding from the nose. That's Devolver. Okay, this is the original art, and it looks, honestly, nothing like what the art actually looks like now. It's not pixel Just like a Harrison Ford with two pistols.
Yeah,
it looks like Doom, though. The OG Doom. It's great.
I still really like the idea. Like, I would love if they still used this kind of as the art. It's like one of those, like, it's very, very well, like, painted, digitally painted, I guess. But very, like, 80s action hero, Indiana Jones, like you're kind of saying, with, like, again, like a rifle bullet, like a 357 and a like a 9mm pistol. Both holding guns and like shooting, like photorealistic more, I guess.
Yeah. And like, two casings like fading away, falling, shooting at him, you know? Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Cool. I love the idea of like having that like photorealistic art, then like the jarring of the, oh no, it's actually just like this cute little pixelated game, right?
Also, the sconces on the wall are mounted on two Desert Eagles. Like, even the decorations in the back are all on
underneath them. It's like crosshairs that are like crosshair patterns that are decorating like the column that it's on.
Yeah.
The column has like the bas relief or the bust relief is carved.
It's bullets.
Like bullets, yeah.
They already had the skull in mind for Enter the Gungeon, because Enter the is in the shape of a skull and then Gungeon is underneath.
I like the fact that one of these little bullet men is just holding a gun in a photorealistic like white Mickey Mouse glove
with the white glove. Yeah, exactly.
It's awesome. Yeah,
they're both there. It's and they're both like Rayman hands, essentially, right? Like the one in the back is also holding like a shotgun.
Yeah,
he's got his Rayman hands on the shotgun.
Yeah that's beautiful.
Yeah, so that's been kind of the real life side of it. I thought it was really cool how they just went to E3 without a ticket and with a laptop and a prayer and somehow landed a deal with Devolver after 11 days of work. Like, and then all this culminating to an amazing game that most gamers know today is just
me doing my 9-to-5, hoping to retire when I'm 60. These motherfuckers, Jesus,
land a deal in 11 days. But they had to put the work
in.
Right?
Work, man. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I know.
We just talked about how you could have finished your comic this week, but instead decided to drink wine and clean your apartment for 5 days.
I could not have finished it this week. There is too much work.
I'm joking. Well, I mean, that's it. Like, if you're putting in 16-hour days, right? Like, is it going to be the same product at the end? Who knows? But some people are capable of it. Some people just want to not drywall their house. They want to play God of War all day. What can I say? You know?
Yeah, exactly. That's a very common thing that all of us have reference to. But also, it's like, if I had 11 days of 16-hour days to write a pitch, I could probably still do that in a San Francisco parking lot.
And a working game, though, and working cover art. And
working cover art in 11 days, sure, but
and working demo, because also when this guy accepted, like he said, Nigel instantly loved the game and thought it looked so playable already after 11 days. So
that's all
pretty
thing.
Incredible.
Hey kid, I almost forgot this, and flicks the USB to him. He catches it like the bullet, like the bullet casing.
I think it's a good time to move away from the development and move on to some more in-game stuff. But we'll do that a little bit after the break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, welcome back from the break.
Doing Robin Williams impression again.
don't be afraid. It's just a bullet. But any about
Captain, my Jamie.
So you guys were saying you both made to about second floor bosses, in Gungeon.
Yeah.
Okay.
I made it to the second floor bosses plenty of times, but never beat any of them. Like I said, okay. I don't think. Maybe I beat Beholster once, but I don't think so. I feel like I've seen the next stage. Like, I feel like I did get there one time, but I've also seen people playing it. I've never like watched a full run, but I've seen enough clips of it that I might just be like mixing up my memories in my head.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, for the next section, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to keep grabbing these screenshots I have of each floor's bosses, and we'll look at them together. You've probably seen some of them, but we can describe them for the listeners at home. All of them are meant to be like fantasy-esque puns kind of thing.
Yeah.
So the first round here is the first floor called the Keep of the Lead Lord. And we have three bosses, the Bullet King, the Gatling Gull, and the Trigger Twins. So I don't know if you guys want to start explaining those.
Bullet King is a Bullet King, Gatling Gull is a Gatling Gull, and the Trigger Twins are brothers, bullets, bullet brothers with little revolvers.
The Gatling Gull is like ripped from the waist up. Human body,
very Arnold Schwarzenegger-esque. He's got if I do a quick count, that's what, 14 abs, I think.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, he's got a 14 pack if you count the obliques there. But yeah, just like biceps on biceps. Got very hairy pits, which is weird for a bird.
Yeah, I was gonna say, it's funny. I think his like pit hair is like, because he's not a gull, he's like a raven or something. He's black, but his like pits are also like black feathers.
Yeah,
or black hair. Yeah, don't overthink it. It's the body of a man. There's no reason to think that the body of the man has feathered armpits.
It could
versus
be
just regular armpits.
It could be an interesting detail.
You can't shave the feathers. You got to pluck them, or else they'll grow back even thicker.
God.
And then he's got a drum, I don't know, the size of like an 80-gallon barrel on his back.
Yeah, and he uses that to shoot like big mortars down that have like circular patterns whenever they shoot.
Yeah, the Bullet King is a bullet that floats above the ground. He's got a red velvet cloak with like a frilly top, and then he's got like an iron crown on top of his head. Which begs the question, how's that stay exactly where it is? Because he's a perfect cylinder. A crown is a perfect cylinder. How does he get it to stay there?
You know? Maybe it's like
it's welded?
Kind of rubbery on the inside, so you can move it. Okay. You can move it, but like once you stop moving, it's kind
of... Once you stop moving it, yeah.
It's like a gasket.
You have to kind of angle it a little bit.
Yeah.
Then Trigger Twins is like, there's like one cool twin bullet and then one happy twin.
Yeah. So the Bullet King, there's a cool way. There's something called a Casey, which is just one moment.
Hello, Ice. Hello, Ice. Ice, you would be on the podcast.
It's 6 p.m. and we usually go out at 5. So she's like, hey, it's time to go inside. It's time to eat. You know? So the Bullet King, anyways, has there's a bat you can unlock called the Casey, which is like the strongest weapon in the game. It's a melee weapon. And like when you swing it, it deflects bullets. If you hit an enemy, it hits the enemy. And if the enemy runs into another enemy, it kills that enemy too.
Wow. That's pretty sick.
And it's pretty much one shots everything. Bullet King has like a little advisor next to it.
Okay.
And if you go up and hit the advisor into the Bullet King, it's a one hit kill. And
holy shit.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so you can just go bang and move on to the next floor. And if you beat a boss without dying, you get what's called a master round. And or without dying, without getting hit.
Yeah.
Ice, you're distracting me, and I don't appreciate it.
Ice, Ice, do you want to be on the podcast, Papa?
Yeah. Got a lot to say today. Yeah, so that's a really cool way to get your master round easily if you get a KC.
What is the master round?
So this sticks with you for your whole run. It's just like goes in your ammonomicon. And if you, it gives you, I think, an extra heart and an armor.
Okay.
So it gives you a lot of extra health. So you want to be hitting all of these. And if you get all of the master rounds and get to the end of the game, that's a big achievement. And probably something happens, but I'm not sure what. I gotta be honest.
Cool.
Because I've never done it. But that's the hardest achievement in the game. That's the 0.1% achievement on Steam is all the boss no hits. Right. Yeah.
Acquiring five master rounds in a single run unlocks the Lead God achievement and Super Hot Watch.
Okay, so it's an item unlock too. Okay, that's tough then. To unlock all the items, that's probably the one that most people are missing. That's really hard to do.
Yeah. Although, I mean, considering it's like a bullet hell, there's like pattern recognition, you could probably no hit all the bosses, but like being able to do that in a single run is, you'd have to be some kind of lead god, frankly.
Yeah. So the super hot watch, it's a passive item. If you're not moving, it slows down time to 1/60th. So,
it is the super hot game power.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, it's cool. And it only rewards the top, like the highest tier of players, exactly. Too.
You're already good enough that you probably don't need this item to beat the game, yeah. Right? Because you've beaten the game without taking damage, so.
Yeah. The next floor, there are secret floors, which we'll get into, but we're just doing the vanilla floors right now. The next floor is called Gungeon Proper. This one, difficulty starts to ramp up a bit. I guess this is where you guys capped out. And there's three bosses, the Ammo Conda, Beholster.
You got to remember that maybe I didn't cap out here and I did beat one of these bosses one time, but I don't really remember. Huh? So maybe.
And Gorgon is the last one.
Hit it better. Gorgon.
Gorgon. Oh, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. Very good pun.
Yeah.
Beholster. Yeah, they're big D&D fans. The Gorgon's the one I like the least matching up against. She has like this poison move.
The Ammo Conda is considered is widely considered to be the most annoying boss in the game. Apparently.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Due to its somewhat random attack patterns, its ability to heal itself, and the earliness of its appearance compared to its difficulty.
Okay.
Yeah, I never beat it. That's what said. That was my wall, was the Ammo Conda. I never got to fight the Beholster. He's great. So instead of having additional eyes on the stalks around
that
him,
gun.
He's holding six weapons. So five guns and a bazooka.
Yeah. He shoots like seeking missiles at you and then has patterns that are happening, like spreading out from him. So you're like trying to run away from these seeking missiles, and you can shoot the seeking missiles to kill them, but by also dodging his other patterns. Then he does a big eye laser that kind of goes back and forth, and you have to dodge roll over it both sides.
Use your iframes over it. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Ammo Conda's a snake. It's a big snake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like Zelda bosses where the snake bosses where you can defeat the segments of them.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
It can heal, though. It can regenerate, and it can apparently grow to unlimited size. It can just keep growing if you're surviving and not destroying segments. It never stops growing.
Oh, shit.
And then the Gorgon is Gorgon from Greek mythology. It looks like Medusa specifically. And wielding the Gorgon Meduzi, like an Uzi, is wielding dual Uzis. So,
cool. I'm getting up to the next floor. This is one where I'm starting to not know the fights as much because I've gotten to them much less. I'm still playing this game like a couple runs a day. I just got a PlayStation 5 controller, so I actually have the twin sticks now to play instead of just the keyboard and mouse. There's arguments for both. Aiming's a bit easier, keyboard and mouse, movement's better on twin stick.
Oh my god, I'm not going to remember who it was. There's somebody in the Lore Boys Discord server who has a controller and they play with a mouse. So they play movement on controller and they play mouse in their right hand for shooters.
That's
and
abominable. That's insane.
That's okay. They
that's
asked
Jester,
that,
right?
No, it wasn't Jester. It was sorry, I'm scrolling up a lot. But they said like, oh, am I abominable for gaming like this? And honestly, I think it's pretty big brain. Because I really hate my WASD movement is not good at all.
Really?
My aim's not great either, but man, like I love the movement on a controller, so.
You have just more degrees of freedom between like WASD, you're going, what is it, eight directions?
That's it.
Yeah.
On the twin stick, now that I've got it here, like on the twin stick, it might actually be kind of good to, yeah, maybe. Maybe I spoke too soon. Perhaps I shouted because I did not hear what he had to say because he was right or whatever that biblical meme is.
Waterboarding instructor is who it is.
Maybe he's got a couple other things to teach us as well other than waterboarding.
Yeah. Whenever I play with the mouse, I play with Hunter a lot, which is one of the starting classes, and she has a crossbow, which is really good one shot and has really good range. And I really much prefer the mouse for that. I was finding when I was trying with the keyboard, when I was trying with the controller. But I probably have 25 runs mouse and keyboard and like two on twin stick at this point. So maybe it's just going to be a time.
My aiming is definitely better with a mouse. I make myself play on controller because my rationale is I'm not very good at the game, but I'm like, if I survive, it doesn't matter if I'm not doing damage. As long as I'm surviving, I'm surviving. But if I'm doing damage and taking damage, then I only take 6 shots and the game's over. So
I'd say that's true to a point, with the exception of boss fights. With the boss fights, like, surviving is of course key, but if you're not doing enough DPS, the boss fight's going to go on so long you're going to get hit anyways. So
yeah, but they don't have like a DPS check where it's like, dealt enough in enough time. Like that's my theory. It's like, as long as I can keep dodging, as long as my movement's perfect, then that's good. If my aim is perfect, then I'm going to take damage, right? Like,
No,
if I had to pick one, I'm going to pick the movement, which is why I play with controller. But yeah, I can absolutely see, like, if I could just do damage fast enough, then I could get through it without taking damage for sure.
The real answer is a mix of the two. And if you had perfect movement is the one you want. Yeah.
A mix of the two, like a controller and a mouse, right?
Yeah, exactly.
All accepted is the right way to play.
It's so big brain.
So the next level is the Black Powder Mine. There's the Cannon Balrog, which I've never fought. There's the Mind Flayer, which I've gotten a couple times, and the Treadnought, which I've gotten a couple times.
The Mind Flayer is just a regular looking D&D Mind Flayer, so like kind of a skinny man with an octopus head, and he's got a gun to the head of like a bell.
not smiling, frowning.
All
right, we really got to enunciate. We got to hit this more. It's Mind Flayer, like, because you're in the Black Powder Mine. There's going to be some people listening who are like, yeah, Mind Flayer, no problem.
Sorry,
but it does look like an Illithid or a Mind Flayer.
Yeah. There's a Cannon Balrog, which is just like a skull shrouded in darkness.
It'd be Cannon Balrog, I guess.
Yeah, Cannon. For a second, I did the same thing. I was like, I don't get the pun on this one. I've been looking at the boss wiki here, and I was just like, I didn't get it, but it took me a few seconds. I was like, oh, like a cannonball. Rog.
Yeah.
And then Treadnought is like a tank. Not their best pun, let's say.
It's a bullet. Driving a tank. I know the Treadnought fight the best out of all of them, and that one is just don't get close to it. Like, stay far away. Your mobility is huge on that one. If you have extra movement speed, like, Treadnought becomes really trivial because it's a lot of explosions from the source of the boss. So the farther away you are, and honestly, that's the secret to a lot of fights in this game. The farther away you are from your enemies, the more they spread, the more gaps there are to maneuver,
and your reaction time, right? Like,
in your reaction time. And are dodge rolling super powerful, but if you can get away without dodge rolling, you ultimately have more control, because when you dodge roll, you're committing to land in a certain place and you're locked into it for like a second.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't adapt in that second while you're rolling. But if you are just dodging, you can always have control of your character. That makes sense.
Yeah. If you're just moving to dodge rather than dodge rolling.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's like high level play is really saving your dodge. There's also something called blanks, which you get two every level.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a nuke. Clear all the bullets off the screen, push away enemies that are really close to you.
Also, I want to just point this out because I recognize the design of this character, of the Treadnought. So it is just a small caliber bullet. He's got a big round green helmet with the goggles above his eyes. And he's poking his head out of the turret of the tank, he come in.
He looks agog. His like eyes are going in like different directions and his mouth is open like, bull.
Yeah, but I recognize this from The Simpsons because Mr. Burns does it at one point where he plays like, he plays like music to try and...
Thinking about tomorrow.
And I was like, that's got to be a reference to some other thing that is way older than all of us, and it is the American presidential nominee Michael Dukakis is the source of this photo. So I think he ran against Nixon and got like absolutely shellacked. But here's the photo, a little extra real world lore there of Mike Dukakis.
It was for the tank picture. I'm pretty sure is why he lost. Like, why a lot of people say he lost the election.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, wow. So Michael Dukakis, the photo op that tank. But yeah, this picture of him sticking out of a tank is largely credited with the dopey grin. There was like a smear campaign that ran against like that, that used that specific photo, and it's kind of like said to have killed his presidential run. Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's Mr. Burns doing it, and then the treadnought. So there's the cycle is complete.
It's found its way into the game. Yeah. Wow. That's amazing.
Well, I mean, if these people were developing for BioWare when Dragon Age 2 came out in like 2011, they're definitely like 10 years older than we are. So this might have been relevant to one of their lives, right?
Yeah. But, there's a mine flayer, like we said, mine. He's holding the gun to the bell. One of his signature moves is he will disappear and there'll be like 10 bells on the screen. And you have to find out which one is the real bell. So you shoot bells, and if it's a fake bell, it'll do an explosion of bullets. If it's the real bell, then the mind flayer will recompose in the middle of the
fight.
Continue again.
Apparently, the sinister bell is a reference to the
to Dark Soul. Item,
to Bloodborne, or a reference to the mind flayer enemies from Demon Souls who also carried bells. Yeah.
The dodge roll is also a reference to Dark Souls.
Is it?
Yes.
The first guys to do invincibility frames, was it?
They love that game. They love that game. It's Binding of Isaac and Dark Souls are like two of the highest of their
influences. Inspirations.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, it's true. The mind flayers are a very annoying enemy in the Tower of Latria in Demon Souls. They're they'll paralyze you and then kill you in one hit. At least if you're early game, because that game is not in order. You just go wherever you want.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then the Balrog, like creepy Balrog. I'm not honestly sure what he does because I haven't run into him enough. But cannonball is the pun there. That we just I didn't catch that. Moving on to the fourth floor. I don't think I've even gotten to these bosses. I've just hit the fourth floor. There's the high priest, which is
wearing a red robe. He's got like a million bullets, essentially four eyes kind of like glowing out of like the shadow of his hood, but it's like the in-game bullets that like white circle with the red outline essentially for his eyes. And his like he's wearing a huge pendant, which is also like a bullet, like a shot, I guess. And then he's just got a gun poking out of the myriad of eyes in the center of his face.
It's very much like that art that Pete did where the guy has the fake arm and he's holding the gun out of the pizza box.
Oh, fuck. Yeah. That was a classic. Yeah.
Just a gun.
Stupid picture. Why did I draw that?
The Bleak Jihad, I think.
Yeah.
There's kill pillars.
Also bullets for eyes. All the bosses on this floor have bullets for eyes.
Yeah.
Or shots for eyes. The kill pillars and the next one, Wallmonger, they're on fire. They're burning bullets. But the kill pillars is four like black bullets, and they're standing on top of like pillbox like floating platforms, I'm guessing.
It looks like a swamp, but instead of the spikes, it's guns.
Yeah,
I think in the actual practice, like all four of them are spread out into like a four pillars of a room, and you have to deal with like four sources of bullets at once.
Kind
of
thing. Okay.
Yeah.
And then Wallmonger instead of Warmonger is a big wall with like the petrified corpses of like bullet people who work in the Gungeon. And he's just like he's a face. He's a wall man. He's got like portcullis teeth, you know?
Yeah. Portcullis teeth.
Again, I don't have too much to say about those. I haven't experienced them yet. I'm hoping to get good and run into them more. But the last person that you will run up against is you encounter them like this at first. I'm trying to find a picture of High Dragon when they come out of their pile of gold.
Okay, we got to hit it. We got to hit it better. High Dragon.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh God, we've got the vocal coach here today.
Yeah. You end up fighting like a dragon skeleton. It's a multi-phase fight. Like at one point I watched this where there's like literally full screen of bullets coming at you with just circles of safety, so you have to dodge roll until the bullets stop. When I look at pros playing this, they say these fights are a lot more about intimidation than actual them being hard. Exactly.
Yeah. Once also, it's the end of the game, right? Like you've been through all the other floors, those were hard, like you're just like you're nervous, right? You don't want to choke.
And if you make it through all that,
I guess we could, sorry, we could describe at home. The High Dragon is a pile of gold with a golden barrel sticking out of the pile of gold, and then just one dragon eye in the pile, essentially.
It's the last shot of the first Hobbit movie when he's about to encounter Smaug. He's buried in gold,
And then reverse order for those that I posted. It's skeleton second and normal dragon first.
Okay,
Yeah,
I've seen the Indie Mouse video where he plays this. So I've seen this. I've seen the dragon fight. And it is straight up like, I think one of your abilities, you get like a limited amount of grenades, which like clear a safe area of bullets off the screen.
Blanks, yeah.
Okay,
that's a blank, yeah.
And then he was using those to create other like little islands in the storm that could get his iframes or his invincibility frames closer to a safer spot, basically.
Yeah.
It does look very intimidating, but obviously like gotta be possible, apparently.
It's a big dragon, gun for a nose, and he's got 2 9mm. Just dual wielding akimbo pistols, essentially.
Dragon gun keeps it strapped. Yeah.
Yeah. Then he turns into a same thing, but a skeleton.
Yeah. So if you get through all that, you get to walk down this path. You open a chest, and on top of the chest, there are two bullets holding like revolvers at each other, like this. And you open the chest, and normally when you die, in the game, which at this point, if you got to the end, you've died many times, you know that this like big crosshair goes on your screen, focuses it on you, and then shoots you, and your ammonomicon opens and it says how many enemies you killed.
And it looks like the crosshairs look like it's got like a stopwatch, like ticking, like hand, like second hand ticking, essentially. So it looks like, and I don't know if this is the canon or this is the speculation, I guess. But it looks like, you're going down into the gungeon and somehow you like get sent back in time so that you don't canonically die. You get to retry because you got like time reversed, essentially, whereas you still remember what happened. So you have the skills, you know, the guns, I guess.
You just gave me an idea, man, of Lore Boys canon, what the ending is.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So this game is Groundhog Day then, because over and over again, trying to get through. And at the end, the very ending, you have control over the cursor that normally killed you, the crosshair.
Oh, it's not a cutscene? Do you get to move your mouse around?
You can move it around, and you're like, wait, what do I do with this thing? And then you realize you have to target yourself and kill yourself with the gun that can kill your past.
Okay, cool, yeah. Okay.
So you shoot yourself in the head, and then you go down this portal, the colorful portal, the opening theme song that from the title music starts up, credits roll, and you're fucking pumped. You're starting your Reddit post. I cleared the gungeon for the first time.
Also, the gungeon theme, we have not touched on this yet. Dave's wife, Erica, I think her name was.
Bill Murray, composed, Dave's wife.
A banger.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the gungeon theme rules.
Oh, it's so good, man. I remember the first time I listened to it, like I watched the whole opening cutscene, then it kind of drops to quiet, and then like just fucking starts up, fucking castle, enter the gungeon, let's go, dude. And it got me so pumped to try the game. And I failed the first few times, but I was still pumped.
Yeah, it's what we were kind of saying before. Like, there's very little to dislike about the game. Like, the music's on point, the graphics are on point, the movement is fluid, like it feels like hard but fair. Like, there's just like, there's like a lot of creativity. It's like some good humor, like also cute sometimes. Like,
There's all good. A bunch of other like super intricate stuff too. As you get to know the game, there's ways to open the secret rooms. There's a resourceful rat will steal chests unless you step out all the candles in the room. Then the resourceful rat won't come anymore. If you don't want the resourceful rat to steal something, you can leave to a neighboring room and re-enter the room. You'll catch the resourceful rat, and now you can go up to two rooms away without the resourceful rat stealing it, because he's got caught, so he's being more careful.
Okay.
If you get a gun in the first in the level, then you won't get a guaranteed gun from the boss. You always get a gun from the boss if you never got a gun in the level, but sometimes you want to manipulate it so you get an item. So then you would buy a gun in the level so you get an item from the boss.
Okay.
There's a bunch of like super intricate stuff where you can go as casually as you want to this game. You're like, oh, I tried my best and ammo kinda sucks. Or you could be like, I am fucking know everything about this game. I know every gun synergy, every item synergy. Just go.
And I
to the back.
I did just realize the pile of gold that the high dragon is in is empty bullet casings.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's not a pile of gold, it's a pile of empty bullet
shells. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So we are almost in an hour, but I'm going to go through the secret floors on and how to get rid of the resourceful rat from your run.
Rat is what, like a rat goblin who follows you around?
Saying it a lot.
Yeah, so resourceful rat, you can catch him. He just steals your shit. So like whenever, let's say I get an ammo drop, right? And I have ammo on the ground, but I don't have any guns to reload right now. So I go to my next rooms and I come back. I'm like saying myself slowly because I know Pete's just absorbing the art right now.
Yeah. I Googled him. I don't know if you posted him here.
I was gonna, yeah.
Fantastic.
I've seen him, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, on floor one, so let's say, yeah, you get some, you drop something, you don't have the room to carry it right now. You come back, it'll be gone. There's a note. And the resourceful rat had stole your shit. And he leaves like a note like, haha, you idiot or something.
Yeah,
and
your stuff got grabbed by resourceful rat, sucker.
Exactly. And then it'll be signed RR, always.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, so, he's a George fantastic. Resourceful Rat Martin.
Yeah. So you don't actually meet him until like much later. So I'll post like relevant photos as we go through when we meet him too. Okay. But for now, he's just kind of a mysterious guy who steals your shit. And I'll tell you, this kind of is spoilers if you want to figure out every secret yourself. But I'm telling you, you would need to play for thousands of hours to discover this by yourself. So just listen to me tell you.
Don't do that, dummy.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, it's easier if you just listen to Jamie. Then you figured it out.
Yeah.
The secret to figuring out the Gungeon secret of Resourceful Rat is to listen to the lore boy.
Yeah,
and it's not one of those like fun secrets where it's like, oh, I'm gonna figure it out. It's like, no, you would have just had to throw your head at a wall enough times until you accidentally figured it out. So, mm-hmm. So on floor one, the way that this is gonna work, by the way, there's floor one and secret floor one, floor two, secret floor two, floor three, secret floor three. They kind of go in order like that.
Okay.
So floor one, you locate the fireplace
in numerical order, as we traditionally call it. I think is.
Well, it's 1, 1, 2, 2, 3, 3.
Okay.
not like 1 or 1, 2 or 2, 3 or 3.
Okay.
You have to go 1, then 1, 2, then 2, then 3, then 3. Yeah.
1, 1.5, 2, 2.5, 3, 3.
Sort of. Yeah, you can think of it that way too. Yeah. You can think of it that way too. Yeah, so you have to find the fireplace and then find a barrel of water, roll the barrel of water and extinguish the fireplace, then go into the fireplace and flick a switch. And then the whole game goes rumbles, and you're like, "Whoa, something happened."
Yeah. Okay, does the game rumble or did your laptop do that, Jamie?
Yeah,
I actually do it myself. I go rumble, okay. Rumble.
Your graphics card is turning off, so you can connect to the internet. Vibrating.
And this opens up somewhere on the floor, another room, and in that room there's a door to go to the oubliette, which takes two keys. Two keys on floor one is a large investment. There's times where you can get through all of floor one and get one key. So if you manage to get two keys, usually you buy one from the shop, you keep them, you don't open any chests, and you go for the first secret room. So it's
does the fireplace always spawn? And like, is there always there's always a water bottle there or a water barrel?
Usually a water barrel in the same room, always a water barrel somewhere. So,
okay, so you might have to roll from another room.
Okay.
Yeah, speed runs. If it's not in the same room, turn it off and on again.
Reset, yeah.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I've rolled it, like, I've spent more time rolling a barrel than fighting enemies in a couple runs.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah, yeah. Like, if it spawns far away, now I just stop doing it. But, so if you wanted, you could just take your two keys and go right down to the next secret floor. If you're a real gamer, you'll beat the boss on the first floor first and not go down, get your rewards, then go, you know?
Okay.
Makes sense. So, and then now you're in the oubliette, which is the next floor. The boss there is a slime, a big D&D slime.
An oubliette is a prison where the only way in or out is on the ceiling. It's like a trap door. So you would lower a prisoner into the prison cell.
You drop them in and you forget about them, which is in French. Yeah. But et makes it so cute.
Yeah.
You're literally leaving someone to die of thirst. Oubliette, cute.
Yeah, the French, the French lords.
Yeah, Madame Guillotine, oubliette. Yeah. So somewhere on that first secret floor, you'll find a crest, and the crest acts as an armor heart, and it'll be your most recent one. So this means if you get hit just once, you'll lose this crest. But if you want to do all the secrets, you better hold on to this fucking crest.
Okay.
So it becomes a no-hit run if you want to get all the secrets while you have this crest. You can get hit elsewhere, but if you don't have a crest, but you need to have it right now. So
okay. I've got the crest. I haven't been hit.
You got the crest, haven't been hit. You make your way through. You fight the slime boss at the end of the Oubliette. You get down to floor two. Now we're navigating floor two, trying to find an altar, which always spawns in floor two.
Okay. I have seen the altar before and gone to it, and my character says, I don't have what I need for this. And I'm like, okay.
Okay.
Because you had to know to put the water into the fireplace, you stupid idiot. And flick the switch.
To get the crest and then not get hit to get there, to then take that to the altar. Because then I might have done that and then been on floor two and been like, okay, I guess I'll just keep going. Like, you know, like maybe I got to get to the final boss with this thing. I don't know.
Yeah. And now that will open up the ability to go down to secret floor two. But before you do that, on normal floor two, you better have saved a bunch of currency because you need to buy a Gnod key.
Okay.
Yeah. It costs a total of 1,000 currency, which you cannot possibly do in two floors of a single run. So you have to gradually buy it over runs, and then it becomes worth 115 from there on out.
Okay.
So it's progress based up until you unlock it the first time. Then it's always 115, which you can get over two floors. Yeah.
Okay.
So
you're putting down payments until you can actually buy it for 115.
You will not see the rat like until probably like run 50 if you're good, like kind of thing.
Okay.
Because there's other stuff to do too. This isn't even the only gatekeeping part. But so the advanced player knows to keep the 115 aside. Then you beat the normal boss in floor two, and you head down to the secret level, Abbey of the True Gun.
Oh, that's great.
Yep. So that's the secret. You run through the whole thing on the Abbey of the True Gun. This one, there's nothing like, you don't have to bring a crest out of there. You don't have to bring an item out of there. You just have to get through and survive.
And once you the old king.
Yeah. I've never fought him, so I don't know anything about him, but yeah.
He's an old looking bullet.
Yeah. He's probably like a harder king bullet or whatever from floor one. So we finally make it to the third floor. So we've done the first floor. We kept two keys. We gimped ourselves effectively at the beginning of our run to be able to get a secret floor where we got a crest, fought our way through, beat a boss. Then we went to the second floor, used the crest at the altar, which opened up the 2.5 floor. But while we're on the second floor, we spent our 115 to get our Gnod key. Now we're cleared the second or 2.5 floor. Now we're on the third floor.
Okay. Is this all still without getting hit, or have we used the amulet on the altar?
No, we used the amulet at the altar.
Yeah, okay. Between right. the only time it's between 1.5 and 2 where you can't get hit.
Okay.
Yeah. And then we finally make it to the third floor. And now you still need some more mats. So you have to have at least one key, two blanks, and the Gnod key. Two blanks is easy. They refill to two every floor. So just make sure not to use one on floor three. And have one key in the bank. By floor three, your key economy should be a bit better than floor one. So that's not so bad. And the Gnod key. But it's not that easy because it doesn't tell you where the door to 3.5 is. You have to run around, and when you see dust kick up under your feet, run in circles on that one area, which will clear enough dust to show the door to go down to 3.5.
Jesus. Okay.
This is why I'm like, don't just try and figure it out yourself. You'll never figure it out. But yeah,
I mean, that, so that's the one of these so far that I think you're more likely to figure out, because like you'll be playing and, but like, it'll take you so long because you'll have to get to floor three in the first place. You don't have to be that good. And then you'll be running around one day. You'll see like dust kick up. You'll be like, oh, that's weird. And then you'll be like, oh, yeah, look at this. It's like kicking up. And then you'll realize like something's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like of all the secret rooms, that's the one that you're most likely to find, which I respect from a game dev point of view, again, that they put it in floor three. So now you get to floor three and you realize like, oh shit, there's secret rooms. I should go back and see if there's secret rooms in the other floor too, right? Is the idea.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. So then once you found that, you use your one key, your two blanks, the Gnawed key, and you get into Resourceful Rat's lair. And at this point, you've had so much shit stolen from this asshole. So you already hate him. You already hate him. So I'll post like, this is like the first phase one. Of, oh yeah, it's what Pete posted, exactly that.
Oh, so yeah, that's what, he is. Yeah, he's like an anthropomorphized rat with just four huge teeth, two on top, two on the bottom, like the Japanese throwing daggers in one hand. I don't remember what those are called. And then Kunai. He has an orange handgun, which is silenced with a cartoon yellow block of Swiss cheese.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, and exactly that. And his fights are rat-like. He throws out rat traps. He has a giant wheel of cheese that separates into wedges that come out at you.
Very cool.
I'm trying to wonder what this thing would be called. Like the gun, it's his gun, the gun itself. Not the resourceful rat, obviously. But like what would be the cheesy gun pun? I'm trying to think of like different cheeses and different guns, but I'm not familiar with either.
Oh man.
Yeah, I don't know. That's you let us know. You call us when you figure it out, Pete.
I will.
I'm trying to think of all the things, all the cheeses I know, and then nothing's popping off at the moment.
If it was bigger, it could be like the Briezuka. If it was like a
That'd be good.
I went Brie too. That's funny.
That's not a bad one. Well, mozzarella was too long and I couldn't think of anything to put in there.
Yeah. Is there anything that
Gunda instead of Gouda? Gunda,
yeah. Is there any die? Is his quote? That's great.
Is there any cheese that rhymes with AK? Because then you could just say that cheese 47.
Probably. There's like a million cheeses, man.
Yeah. Anyways, that's phase one. And he's a rat. Like it's pretty like, I don't know, like normal up until this point. But you kill him.
I found it. I found out what they called it.
What is it?
Elimentaller, like Emmentaler, and Eliminator. That's not bad.
Okay, not bad, not bad.
It's okay. It was not okay. Bad.
That's hard. Boy.
Yes.
Right. I never would have thought of Emmental.
We tried for a whole 45 seconds. That was difficult.
Yeah, we got to put in 11 days. That's the thing. That's the key.
So yeah, phase one, normal ass rat. He has some cool like rat themed fight. Like mechanics and stuff. You beat him and then he scurries down a little rat hole. And you're like, well, was that it? So then you jump down the rat hole and he is in a full ass mech. Which
Jesus Christ. It is just like a Metal Gear. It's not even stylized at all. It's just like one of the Metal Gears.
The wiki says it is a mech made of all the stolen things that he has. Created a mech out of all the items and guns he has stolen.
Fair enough. There we go. He's melted down everything he's stolen from us, and it's been a lot at this point. So it like he encourages you to stay in front of him. If you try and run up to the side where you kind of can, he will just put out walls of bullets on the side and you'll get hit. So you have to stay in front of him. He has two weapon systems on his shoulders, which he can shoot off, which make his attacks just go to like a lower form of themselves. Then you just shoot your way through, get the health bar to zero, and if you beat phase two, up until now, this is, okay, the twist. You've been playing a twin stick shooter, then all of a sudden it goes third person over your shoulder and you're playing Punch Out with the rat.
That's great.
Yeah, it is hard.
It is just Metal Gear Rex. It's got like the drum on one side and then the gun on the other.
Yeah,
that's a pretty cool reference.
Yeah, there's a lot. They for sure a reference to that. Yeah, and then they go for the Punch Out. So the controls are different. It's a completely different game that you've been playing up until this point. And it's hard as fuck. And so he has a bunch of combos. You need to learn them. You need to learn when to dodge, when to attack, how to use your own combos. But depending on how well you do on this fight, for sure you're going to fail your first one unless you're a punch out professional. But once you get good at it, you get rat keys. So you can get up to 6 rat keys during the battle. In order to get all 6, you have to KO the rat with a 3-star super punch 3 times.
Okay.
So if you get all 6 keys, which like the people who are really good at the game do, you get to open 6 chests after this. So you just go from like, you just start outscaling the game so hard at that point, you know, like if you get the right drops or whatever, or if you, especially if you get items instead of guns, because items kind of cumulatively build yourself up.
Right.
So if you want consistent runs, you learn to do secret rooms 1, 2, 3 really well. You can keep going to secret rooms up till 6. I'll be honest, I don't know much about 4, 5, and 6, other than the lich is in 6.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Not to be the reference guy again, but the fist fight on top of the mech that is clearly based off Metal Gear Rex, is also a Metal Gear reference. Like, one of those boss fights finishes with Snake versus like Liquid or some shit on top of the cockpit of one of the mechs. I don't know if it's like 4 or the first one or whatever, but that this entire thing is just a reference to Metal Gear. And Miles Dukakis, obviously.
Apparently in the game files, the mech is actually called Metal Gear Rat. Duel, the punch out duel, is referred to as Liquid Punch Out. So
there we go.
Very much there it is.
References. Yeah.
It is.
Apparently, when you beat him, he gives you his life story. I don't know if you had this written down, James.
Oh, no, I missed that.
Let me read this quote for you guys. So this is, I guess this is spoilers for beating the resourceful rat in the game.
Yeah.
He says, "Pity me, for my story is a tragedy. I was born in the hold of a tradesman's ship, where my mischief made our nest among the refuse. When the tradesmen changed routes, the food they previously held was replaced with weaponry. I watched my brothers and sisters starve, though I vowed to protect them. So I learned to steal from the captain's personal stores. It was sadly not enough. My efforts to feed them only prolonged their suffering. I couldn't steal enough. It became an obsession. I knew that the end was coming. Eventually, driven mad with hunger, my mischief turned on each other. The weakest went first, but soon the last of my kin were gone, eaten by their brethren. When the traitor finally docked, I escaped his ship and found myself here, trapped in time. Wow. I have clawed a home here from nothing, my own kingdom. But here I lie, cut down by a usurper with the pettiest of intent. Revenge? You do not know pain. I have one last thing to ask. Take off your mask so that I may see your face with my own eyes." Oh, that's actually your face. Ha! I realize now. It seems I never knew. True tragedy. The true tragedy being your ugly ass face, I think.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Dude, and there's like a bunch of stuff I don't know. There's like character unlocks. There's like one character that you can start every game with a random gun instead of a starter gun. So if people want to do like a run through with X gun, they just restart the game a million times till they get it. I forgot to mention too, another thing that'll lock you out of this rat thing for a while. You have to find and collect all 6 rat notes.
Yeah.
Which correspond to like
one,
a
one, map. 1, 2, 2, 3, 3.
No. It's okay. You know, like the Lost Forest in Zelda, where you have to choose different like directions. The 6 notes you get, every person's game has a different 6 notes, which correspond to 6 different directions. So you can find your way to the resourceful rat's lair after you go down.
Does say there's a 1 in 4,096 chance of finding the way to the rat without the notes, without any notes.
Okay,
so it's 0.02. You have to do it. You have to do it 4,000 times to maybe get lucky and find your way there by accident.
Yeah. Well, it's like it's a 1 in 4 times 6, I guess, right? Like
1 in 4.
It's 1 in 4, 1 in 4, 1 in 4, 1 in 4, 1 in 4.
To the 6, okay.
Yeah.
I think.
Okay, yeah. Well, anyways, that's what I know so far about Gungeon. There is more about individual characters, stuff that we can like gleam about bosses from Ammonomicons and stuff like that. So we could come back to this and do a deeper dive. Personally, I'd like to see myself beat the game before I came back to that. Whether or not that's possible, we'll see. But there's
So we'll do it in 15 years or so.
Yeah, there's plenty of lore to cover in the meantime. But
yeah, exactly.
That's been my first episode on Enter the Gungeon, a game that I do love. So thanks for being here.
Thank you for being here.
Thanks for coming, Mr. Jamie.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for continuing support the show. If you want to leave us a review, a 5-star review, that'd be very helpful. Or tell your friends about us. It's a great way for us to grow. Peter, what's going on in Instagram?
You know, posting.
Sure.
At Lord Boys Podcast. Sorry. you know, same shit.
Jimbo, you want to talk about Discord?
Ice, do you want to talk about Discord?
Come on. Come on, Ice.
There it is.
There she is. There she is.
Ice. Ooh.
There it is. See, you can see pictures of the dog and talk to me on Discord. Been in there a bunch this week. There's a lot of cool pet photos, people posting fitness progress, just talking about games we're working on. I've been playing Yakuza, so posting funny pictures of Mr. Libido and calling it Darnell. And I'm like, look, it's a pervert. It's Darnell.
Don't worry, he claimed to be first. If you join the Discord, we're not going to call you a pervert. It's just Darnell owns it. What can I say?
Yeah, he honestly leaned into it. So I was just going with his wishes on that.
He's been around for years. He can take it.
Yeah. He joined the Discord. He said, please call me a pervert on the podcast.
Yeah, we made sure to get a couple Patreon subs first because we knew he would just get out after he came.
Yeah. You know?
Coming on the Discord. That's where we're
Discord
at.
And Patreon linked below as well.
Yeah, there's a lore request channel where you can request us to do different things. I see Saucy just posted lore on the Endless series. I have Endless Legends. Apparently there's another game called Endless Space, which I'm going to check out after this. If you guys want to support the show financially, we do have a Patreon, patreon.com/theloreboys. We'll read your name on air at the top of the show. You guys can get access to the loser titles game. You get a fancy name and some secret channels on the Lore Boys Discord server. You get bonus content too. That was another thing that I almost forgot about.
Coming up on a year. We almost got a year of it. I think 50 weeks this week. So two more weeks per year.
Not like that many hours. Not as many hours as there is in a year. Are you going to get bonus content? But you're going to get a year of one 30-minute episode a week.
Yeah, you can listen to one episode a day for a year.
Yeah, I mean, we're coming up on 525,600 minutes, right? But
you can listen to one episode a day for a year if you re-listen to episodes. Sure. Yeah. There's more than 52 days in a year.
Yeah, you're 70, you can get to the 50th episode.
I have so much time all of a sudden. I'm going to take a nap.
you can listen to one episode a day for a year if you re-listen to episodes, or you can listen to one episode a year for the next 50 years. Those are your options, basically.
We better close this thing out, dude. This dog won't shut the hell up. That dog
is popping off. We don't have that. We got Lore Boys Prime. We're having a gun made. It's going to be called the Ice 9 kills. And Ice is going to kill Jamie 9 times for not taking him out. Because Jamie's a cat. That's a little known fact about Jamie. Jamie's a cat, so he's got 9 lives. That's why Ice has to 9 kill.
Okay. Kill 9. Iced him.
That's K9 millimeter.
Do you guys know what Ice Nine is?
No.
Anyway, it's from a Kurt Vonnegut story called Cat's Cradle. It's like a weapon of mass destruction. It's a little crystal that they keep in a thermostat that if it touches any water, it'll turn like all water that it touches into that crystal. So it'll basically just like destroy all water on Earth.
Okay.
Whoa.
I didn't see the end of Glass Onion, but it seems like that was what's going on in that movie. They also have the weird water crystal, right?
Yeah. and I think that would constitute
more boys, take the dog out.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.